What's up, everybody, and welcome back to a Monday rundown here on a Tuesday. We have a little bit of a combo pod. First, Sean and I jumped right in and we talked about NFL, then some NBA. We went all around the league, and then following that, we talked a little women's college basketball, believe it or not. And then at the end, we have a Sunday segment recapping this past weekend's college basketball with Will and Sean, and they will be back to talk about it later in the week. So follow us on Twitter at Sorry Sports and enjoy the pod.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. Tom, it's a Monday rundown on a Tuesday. It's funny, Will and I recorded Sunday night, which will be the second part of this pod, and we're recording tonight. We did everything for the Monday rundown except record on a Monday.
Yep, that one's on me. Hand up. I was traveling, but I am back and better than ever. I'm excited to be back. I really didn't think this is what we'd be leading our Monday rundown in March, but I mean, this was crazy news to me with the Broncos releasing of Russell Wilson. And they're just going to get murdered by the cap. And this is just, honestly, Sean, I hate to say this, and I don't know if you feel the same way. I'm starting to feel bad for Russell Wilson. It wasn't his fault they gave him all the money.
No, and first of all, welcome back, dude. It's welcome back to the East Coast. I know is where you're back at. Quick turnaround trip. Yeah, man, listen, this is the time of year where football starts up again. We had a 3 to 4 week hiatus, and now we've got franchise tags had to be placed today. Free agency legal tampering begins on the 11th, so we're right back into it. It's going to occupy a lot of time over the next couple weeks and then leading up to the draft, of course. I'm with you. I do feel bad for Russ. He is the scapegoat for a really terrible situation that happened in Denver. It was a desperate team that struggled and just straight up failed to draft a quarterback at any time over the last, since Peyton Manning retired, really. And they bring in Russ, they give up an entire draft's worth of capital several years, and then do this crazy extension afterwards, man. And this was 2 years ago, and I was talking about it with Frenchie the other day about what the Giants situation is right now. I said, the league moves really fast. 12 months ago, re-signing Daniel Jones made a lot of sense. 24 months ago, the move for Russell Wilson made a lot of sense. I don't think anybody could have predicted it getting this bad. And obviously you had the Nathaniel Hackett drama and now Sean Payton, but I do feel a little bit bad for Russ. He doesn't help himself, but making him seem like he's the complete reason this organization's in shambles isn't right.
Not at all. I mean, they put a terrible offensive line around him. I mean, you saw the numbers, and of course Russ contributes to that with just the style of player, at least. I mean, he didn't really scramble as much as he used to. He was just kind of getting murdered. I mean, I saw that that team was in last place for pretty much every statistic when it came to getting to the quarterback. And then the other thing is, shame on the Broncos, because we kind of saw him start to falter in Seattle as well. I mean, it obviously wasn't this bad, but he was starting to taper off ever since that first half season where it was the cooking time. And we know who the real cook is. It's Minwoo Lee.
That's right. We're not talking PGA today,
actually. Shout out to a second place, though.
Yeah, and, you know, I had an okay. Billy Horschel held it down a little bit for me. I think he finished T9, but you're right, dude. He was, you could see that the back nine was coming. Maybe a resurgence in Denver was what they were banking on, but he's a diminished player from what he was, and that's okay. But to give a diminished player that give up that much for one and then also tack on the extension with the guaranteed money was just, I mean, that's what desperate organizations do, bro. We see it over and over again.
Yeah, that's kind of like a situation where you didn't want to kill the person, but then you killed the person, and then the contract was like you had to kill the witness too.
Like, are you speaking from experience on this?
I'm not, but I'm just saying, like, you committed that first mortal sin of trading for him, and then you just straight up doubled down and gave him the extension.
Right, and I almost felt like that's how they had to sell it to their fan base, because if it was just the trade and he only had 2 years left, everybody would have been raising their eyebrows.
Just sit down, and maybe we'll start this thing. We'll start a new club called the Educated Fans Club. and we'll just film a video, and I'll just be like, listen, football teams, we get it. You guys made a move. You made a short-term move, but you gave them the big extension because you thought we as fans needed that. Let's just be smarter. All we care about is winning a Super Bowl here.
It reaffirms how desperate teams are for quarterbacks and why teams will stop at absolutely nothing to talk themselves into somebody, as coincidentally right now, J.J. McCarthy is being mocked as high as the third quarterback being taken, because if you don't have one, you have no chance in this NFL. And from the wasteland that was Denver quarterbacks post Peyton Manning, they went for the fences and just fucking missed it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It was just they committed back-to-back mortal sins, and they're going to be in trouble for a couple of years, I think, trying to rebuild here.
$85 million to the dead cap over the next 2 years, $35.4 million this coming season, and $49.6 in 2025. Meanwhile, still trying to make up for all the draft capital lost. This is going to be a tough rebuild. I'm glad Sean Payton got the bag and got the guaranteed years, because he's going to need every single one of them to get back to where they want to be.
No doubt about it, man. Embarrassing situation. The Jets have the longest playoff streak in football, but hopefully they don't look as bad as these Denver Broncos do.
Hey, by the way, speaking of your Jets, the Seattle Seahawks cut Jamal Adams today. What a heist that was.
I think about it all the time. Listen, Joe Douglas outside of Zach Wilson can do no wrong in my book.
Mekhi Becton?
Joe Douglas outside of Mekhi Becton and Zach Wilson can do no wrong in my book. God damn it. Thought we forgot about him.
And there's some more. Of course. He's done some really good things too. A couple other moves to take note of. Mike Evans and the Buccaneers agreed to a 2-year, $52 million deal for $35 million guaranteed. Tom, I thought this was very funny because come Sunday night, this deal was agreed to yesterday morning, Monday morning. Sunday night, it was tweeted out by Mike Florio saying that he wants to go to a team that prioritizes a Super Bowl and has a quarterback that can win one. I'm sick and tired of these players saying stupid shit, because $35 million in guaranteed is all he really cared about. And I don't think, whether it's Baker Mayfield or somebody else, the Buccaneers are on the short list for Super Bowl odds this year.
Well, Evans clearly begs to differ, but obviously that was just a little tweet out there to get them to give him the bag, and that's what they did. By the way, did you like my idea for the Educated Fans Club?
I absolutely did. Somebody has to do it. Why all right.
Us? I'm excited to have you as a charter member and a vice president.
Thank you.
If I die, that means you take the reins, so you better start picking up some of my...
Which is bad, because the vice president literally doesn't do anything else unless the president dies and they have to take over.
Yeah, but that means that you might have to push Alabama out and stop, you know, you're going to have to take over some of my czar things as well.
Yeah, I would definitely tinker with those, but that's all right.
Thank God, now I got to live.
You got to live, like, just hang on by the skin of your balls. Jason Kelce is not hanging on, he's retiring, announced it yesterday.
He'll be fine.
Very, very nice press conference, he was crying a lot. He'll be just fine, dude.
I mean, rightfully so. I mean, 13 years with the same organization, you really don't see that too often in any sports, especially the NFL, where last couple of years, guys usually try and grab the bag somewhere else. I know you hate Philly, but he was a hell of a player. Do you think he makes a Hall of Fame?
Oh, I think he's a first ballot Hall of Famer in 5 years.
No doubt in my mind. Yeah, like I said, I know you hate Philly, but you got to respect that guy.
Listen, I do hate Philly, and when they won the Super Bowl over the Patriots was one of the worst days of my sports life, because I could always hang it over those asshole fans' heads that however bad the Giants were, the Eagles had never won a Super Bowl, and that changed that day. But you can't help but love Kelce, and then obviously him with Travis doing the New Heights pod, he's shirtless at the Bills game. It was all the writing was on the wall, and I will tell you this, I don't think that man's ever wearing sleeves again.
No, and I really don't blame him.
That's a grown man who's not going to wear sleeves.
I do not blame him. He's earned it, though. We got to figure that one out, but he's definitely earned it. I'm happy for him. Did you like the video I sent you of that guy in Australia talking about Taylor Swift?
I did love that, of course. That was great.
Oh, man, the Kelce's really got it all going on. Just an all-American
family.
They
really do. It's their world, and we're just living in it, right?
No doubt about it. Shout out to Taylor Swift for putting them on.
Yeah, right. She's definitely not hurt them, I'll tell you that. Giants do not place the franchise tag, rather, on Barkley, making him an unrestricted free agent. And actually, they did the same with Xavier McKinney. What are your thoughts on those two moves, allowing both to become unrestricted free agents?
This is smart football by the Giants, especially on the Barkley side. It's just, you just don't make this deal. I mean, the Cowboys did the back and forth franchise thing with Zeke for a while, and then they gave him the bag, and they were missing a lot of players because they were paying him so much. I like this move. Maybe he comes back if the market's not out there for him. They give him a big fat 1 year contract or something, maybe a two with a team. I don't know, one of those things. But I like this move for them, not locking him up. Let, I don't know, Tennessee or something lock him up, or Houston, it would look like it was going to be.
Yeah, definitely the right call on Saquon. They were having very unproductive conversations over the last, really since November of 2022, in that bye week of trying to get a deal done. I think he believes that if he tests the market, there will be a team to pay him.
I think
they
will.
Yeah, and the Giants just clearly don't value giving a running back more than $11 million.
But what happened when? What happened when? Who was it? Gettleman? Didn't he say he was going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer and stuff?
Oh yeah.
What happened?
And he was also the one that refused to pick up the phone when other teams were literally offering their franchise for the number two overall pick, and he didn't even inquire on it so he could take Saquon. Look. I've been very adamant about this. I love Saquon. He's been nothing but a perfect representative of the Giants. I feel terrible for him that he's been on some terrible teams and has not really had much success, but he's hurt a lot. He hasn't directly contributed to winning aside from 2022, where he essentially was the offense and his really only healthy season. And now let's go out and test that market and see, do you really want to be a Giant for life? And if the Texans offer $1.1 million more per year than the Giants do, we'll see that. The McKinney thing was a little more interesting to me because Xavier McKinney is a really good safety in this league. And I know we've talked about it ad nauseum of how you don't want to pay safeties, kind of like how you don't want to pay running backs. But he's very young. He's not going to command probably more than $12 or $13 million a year. He's a captain on this team. And I think it behooves the Giants to keep some of their very good players in-house because he's loved in that locker room, respected in that locker room, and I think the more captains, let's say Saquon and McKinney both leave, that may not sit well in the locker room, and if it's only over a couple million dollars, you know, now you got to walk in from training or into training camp from week one and solidify that those were purely right football moves, and good teammates don't really like to hear that.
Yeah, I think they should definitely extend him an offer if they're not going to give him the tag.
I think that was the plan. I think they have until Monday to negotiate exclusively before he hits free agency.
I wouldn't be surprised. The Giants seem like their plan is smart, and you're right. If it's not going to cost them that much money, he's the type of player you want to keep around, even if he is a safety.
Yep, and he's still young in his career. He's not. It's not like he's been in the league for 7 years, right?
Yeah, exactly. All right, you ready to talk some NBA?
Yeah, we are. And boy, Tom, I was thinking of you on Sunday night. You dodged an absolute bullet
with
Jalen Brunson.
Yeah, it didn't look good when it happened. You know, there was a lot of fodder on Twitter and whatnot. But it ended up just being a contusion. I'm liking the way the Knicks are playing it because you can hurt yourself a little bit more and continue to play on that bruise. So I'm glad he's sitting out, kind of like Will alluded to on the podcast with the guy on Kansas. What's his face?
Oh, McCuller.
Yeah, and he kind of has the same issue, right?
Similar.
Yeah. Contusion. So I'm glad they were able to pull it out against the Cavs, like you wrote. And I'm glad that we've avoided certain season ending for the entire team because, I mean, with everybody else bouncing around and out of the lineup, he was kind of the guy that was holding it all together, and we need him. Obviously, he's the GOAT.
He's the one guy you can't lose.
No, of course. Season's over, we lose him, bro. Season's over. Pack it in.
Yeah. The thing with Tibbs, obviously, is he's running these guys into the ground, but this time I will defend him. He really doesn't have a choice.
No, but he did not.
You own Cleveland, bro.
We do. We really have their number. I know Mitchell's not playing right now, but we still have their number, and I would love to see them in the playoffs. This is gonna bite me in the ass saying this, Sean. I hate talking like this as a charter member of the Educated Fans Club, but I would like to see them in the playoffs. I'm gonna say it.
A charter member and probably the founder, since you just came up with it.
We'll take that title together. You were here and you agreed, so.
All right, you're very philanthropic with your titles. I will tell you this. When I watched Deuce McBride absolutely drop Evan Mobley, I was like, shit, they're going to win this game and find a way to gut this out. And that was a pivotal game. You needed that one.
Yeah, we definitely did. I mean, Tibbs is always going to have this team fighting. I don't know how he does it because he just runs these guys into the ground. But now that we don't have like a Fournier or any of these guys who need rhythm and are going to bitch when they're not playing, everybody comes in ready, which I absolutely love. This team has a true identity. And, you know, I kind of had a bad feeling about Brunson. I didn't think it was going to be a contusion, but you're right. Tibbs had to kind of run him into the ground, but he's a small guy. Thank God he's, you know, stocky because, you know, I think running him into the ground is just a recipe for disaster.
He takes the punishment, man, but he's a gamer and he represents what that entire team is, playing through injuries when they can. I mean, fucking in that game.
It's a Knicks team, man. This is a New York City team, baby.
It is, and we've talked about it all season. Hart hit that huge corner three to pretty much ice the game. He also had 19 rebounds in this game.
Just an absolute dog. As hot and cold he can be on the offensive side of the ball, especially shooting, I wouldn't trade him for anybody, really. He's just the epitome of a perfect guy off the bench when you need him, or can spell OB or whoever when he needs to start.
And a guy who shouldn't be taking that many shots in a perfect situation.
Of course, but the Knicks are far from a perfect situation right now, unfortunately.
They very much.
But hopefully, let's get healthy and happy closer to playoff time.
For sure. And a busy weekend in the NBA. I don't think there was a more emphatic statement, maybe across the landscape of the entire season, than what the Boston Celtics did to the Golden State Warriors on Sunday afternoon. They beat them 140-88, and Tom, I don't even think it was that close.
Yeah, I mean, this is one game, but at the same time, the way the Warriors have been playing lately, I think when they got Draymond back and Klay got a little bit hot for a week or two there, they got somewhat of a bump, and I may or may not have gotten carried away on our friend Mike Phillips' pod and said that I like the Warriors in the second half, but they're starting to peter back the other way.
Hey, I'm not going to let you shit on yourself. They had been playing really good heading into that game.
I know.
This is a game where it almost felt, and Simmons and Russillo talked about it, it almost felt like a passing of the torch because it's symbolic of the 2022 NBA Finals where the Celtics were the younger team. They just didn't know how to win those games. And 2 years later, they're the team that seems to be in prime position to win, at least make the finals. And they just – I mean – Jaylen Brown hits the three to start the game 4 seconds in, and you're like, oh my God. And that five-minute stretch in the second quarter was probably the most impressive, dominant stretch of basketball I've seen all year.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, watching that sequence, it felt like they could just, if they just threw up the ball underhand from half court, it was going to go in. They had everything going perfectly.
You want to talk about how good the Celtics have been this year? Listen, the Warriors were on a nice little 6-game winning streak heading into that game. The Celtics were on an 11. The Celtics have beaten teams 3 times this year by 50 points or more. It's the only time that's ever been done in NBA history, and they could do it again.
I mean, they are snoozing to a 1 seed right now. In a relatively, you know, the Bucks are playing much better. Yep. I saw Dame went out there and balled out, and Pat Bev even played a good game with Giannis not being there. I mean, they're just sleepwalking through this. Go look how tight the other conference is in comparison. The Celtics are just that much better.
And Porzingis didn't even play in this game.
I know. It's crazy. I was just watching the Cavs game. It's like, me and Michaela were watching, it's like, it doesn't even look like they're playing hard, and then you look at the score, and they're up 15.
Yeah, no, I know. It happens so fast. It happens in a millisecond, it feels like. So, Tom, I'm going to pose the question to you, because Denver's been rolling now for the better part of the last, you know, 6 weeks. Is the Nuggets Celtics finals inevitable, and should we just do what we did our first year two of the pod, where we say, just wake me up when it's Cavs Warriors?
Honestly, Sean, right now, I'm gonna say yeah. I really am. I mean, I love Anthony Edwards. I'm gonna make a statement right now and say that Anthony Edwards is officially now my guy. It was Kyrie Irving for a while until, well, you know better than everybody what happened there. I haven't had a favorite player since like the 2000 and I don't know Cavs Kyrie Irving. So I'm claiming Anthony Edwards as my guy now. No one else can have him. He's my guy. He reminds me of somebody. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, I know. You sent that text to Will and I.
And I've also tweeted it out, too. He really, like, just watch his game, man. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, you're not the first one to make that comparison. And I think the more traction it gets, the more validated you are. But we'll keep that comparison's name.
That's all we're going to say. Just like we're not going to say the quarterback for the Jets' name until he plays another game. But with that being said, to answer your question, yeah, I'm at the point now where – you know, I don't care if the Celtics go out and lose three games in a row by 20. The same thing for the Nuggets. I think we can just pencil them in, dude.
I agree with you. I don't see how anybody beats Denver four times in a series. I just don't.
I think Boston is honestly at the point now with this unit that it was so well constructed by Brad Stevens that I think they could even overcome like major coaching mistakes from Missoula from any team in the Eastern Conference.
I do too.
Outside of the Bucks.
Heat, yeah, the Heat have been lurking though. Mm. They're playing better again.
I don't think the Celtics lose to this kind of Heat team. Or excuse me, I don't think yes, exactly. That's what I meant. I don't think the Celtics team they're better. I think they're ready for it. I think the only thing that could happen is if Dame just goes crazy and Giannis is just I don't even know out of his mind even more than he is.
If Porzingis is healthy, to me he's the X factor. I don't think there's a team
it's a big
that
if.
Can contend with it is a big if. I just don't think that there's a team that can contend with the depth, the size, and the versatility that the Celtics can throw at you. Oh, by the way, you do have an MVP candidate in Tatum. I know he's not going to win, and that's fine. But he should get more talking about it. Again, he's top averaging three. Over 27 points for the best team in the NBA, for the best team in the NBA, and a team that's walking, as you said, through the Eastern Conference. So,
who's your? I excuse me. Who's your top three? MVP.
I go Jokic one. I probably go right now Tatum 2.
Mm. You got a third or what?
I would probably put
SGA.
I'd probably put Giannis 3.
Ooh. I probably got number 1 Joker, number 2 SGA.
Put SGA there for sure.
Number 3 got to put Tatum, 4 Anthony Edwards, 5 Giannis.
I just think that Bucks team is so not where they are if it's not for Giannis.
Of course. Yeah, you're probably right. I probably got to put him ahead of Edwards.
And by the way, me not putting SGA in my top three, he'd be fourth for me.
Yeah, of course. I just threw a couple extra at you. Yeah, you want to talk about it big time? What'd you say?
I also had to think about that for a quick second.
I know. I kind of curveballed you there. I'm sorry. You want to talk about a former MVP that just scored 40,000 career points?
I would love to, Tom. LeBron James, 40K, only player in NBA history to do it. Does this number signify more to you, or do you think it's just another number for him?
I mean, I think it's just a great way to – we're got to be. We have to be on the back nine somewhat of his career. It's just another number that we get to add to his greatness. I mean, say what you want about him. Can he be annoying? Can he rub people the wrong way? Yes. I mean, but this guy was, he's more than anybody could have ever dreamed of and then what he was supposed, even what he was supposed to be. And plus, by all accounts, he's kind of a class act, as annoying as he can be sometimes. So he's one of the greatest athletes ever.
Two things can be true. He's a class act, but he is also annoying. And, you know, he does things that kind of piss you off. But The 40K doesn't matter as much to me because he already broke, obviously, Kareem's record last year. And I will tell you this, I don't think anybody anytime soon is getting to 40K because it speaks of the longevity and it speaks of just his ability to score the basketball in so many different ways.
Well, that's the combo, right?
Yeah, and I don't know if there's another player between the longevity, the continued dominance for that long. And also, let's be honest, he's had to get lucky too. He hasn't had to face some of the obstacles that a lot of the other guys are going to have to face. Like, could Luka maybe do it way down the line? Maybe, but is he going to be healthy for the next 14, 15 years? I mean, LeBron had a stretch where he played 75 games at least every year for like 12 years, 13 years.
Yep. I think there's two guys in the league right now that have somewhat of an outside chance, and that's Luka and my new guy. Because he came in so young, and he's been a starter since his second year, and he's been averaging a trillion points since he came in. But for me, it's like I don't even want to give hypotheticals because this is just such an astronomical number. Because you have to have like a talent, a scoring talent of those guys, but also the ability to stay that healthy and also the want to fucking do that in and out every day, what LeBron has to do to himself. I mean, every year they come out with LeBron spends this much money on his body alone, and it's like, does Luka really want to do that? Do any of these guys want to do that? That's why I'm going to go on record saying I don't think that anybody ever comes close to this record.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think so either. I think it's going to be LeBron and everyone else is going to be a pretty distant second, third, fourth. Like, I just can't see it. He's a one of one, and you need a lot of things to break your way, but he's also been the reason he's been able to play this long and be this good for this long. Even watching the Clippers game last week or that stretch in the –
Did you watch the Nuggets game? Did you watch that Nuggets game where him and Joker were going at it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that was incredible.
And the OKC game the other night, like – it was crazy, man. What he can still do when he can give you a stretch of like 8 to 10 minutes where he's still the most imposing force on the court.
Still can be the best player in the league for like half a quarter to a quarter.
Absolutely true. And you know, the thing too is he came out in high school. You know, I think Kareem's record, you got to think about it. He had to spend 4 years at UCLA. So if he had come into the league, if he'd been allowed to at 18, would LeBron still be chasing him? You could probably say yes.
Yeah, sure. But at the end of the day, that doesn't poo-poo what LeBron's done.
Oh, no, 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 no. I just wanted to give a little bit of context Kareem. To it.
Kareem's one of the greatest, too. All right, you want to talk about Wemby?
Oh, Tom. What the run he's been on since January, this is what everybody thought we were going to see, right?
I mean, this is it. This is, again, the most sure thing since the guy we just spoke about. There's nothing else to say. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he averages like 8 blocks a game in a season.
You see, he's shooting 40% from three in the last 5 weeks.
He's also, there's a reason for that. Have you watched, I mean, it's tough to watch those Spurs games, but it's like he's just getting smarter by the second. It's like he's not taking those silly, the reason he's taking the, like less threes, but it's just he's cut out all the crap.
I have a stat for you, and you need to tell me the common denominator of the names associated with this stat.
Uh-oh.
No, this is going to be easy. If you don't get this, I'm actually going to be upset. Victor Wembanyama joins David Robinson twice and Tim Duncan as the only rookies in NBA history to record 30-plus points, 10-plus rebounds, 5-plus assists, and 5-plus blocks in a game. What do all three of those guys have in common?
Well, they play for the Spurs.
There you go. The Spurs did it again.
Those fuckers. Oh, my God. I mean, yeah, remember Robinson had like a quadruple-double in the playoffs, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Oh, my God. Yes, they have done it again. I don't know how it happens. It's like there is some luck there because you got to have the pick. But I don't know how they pull it off. I mean, you can't.
30-10, 5-5. That's
I'm not insane. Giving them as much credit for this one, by the way, because every single human being saw this coming from a mile away.
Sure, but when you see it in person or see it on TV, it really does give a different level of resonance.
Oh, no, of course. I'm just saying I'm not giving the Spurs credit for picking this guy. Get the fuck out of here.
No. I'm not giving them credit for that. What I'm saying is the fact that they've been able to draft.
That it's bullshit,
Robinson,
Sean? Yeah.
Duncan and Wemby.
No, it is incredible. And he's going to get better and better. Wait till he puts a little weight on. And he's going to look like a taller version of Gobert, where Gobert's got a little bit of that muscle to him, and he's just going to body people on top of everything else. Ugh. It's going
to
be insane.
When I see him go out to the three-point line, like, when he's kind of in the paint, like towards the outside of the paint, the elbow area, and somebody tries to shoot a three and he just comes over with one step and swats it into the stands, I'm like, this is absolute porn. Like, what the fuck? Nobody else does that.
Nobody else can. Nobody else is that type of human. it's unbelievable. Insane. It really is.
It is. You want to check on the standings a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, everything, honestly, lately has been pretty chalky. I mean, you know, there's a little bit of movement in the Western Conference, but we're looking at things are starting to shape up, you know? Like, the Jazz are starting to everything below the Warriors in the Western Conference is starting to figure itself out. And then we're kind of looking at the same thing in the Eastern Conference, right?
We are. In the West, you've got the battle. The Lakers and the Warriors seem to trade off every week, or every game, rather, for that 9 and 10 spot. Dallas is fading. I think that they might find themselves out of the play-in by the end of the season. Sacramento's there, but I don't know for how long. Phoenix is only a half a game into the sixth spot ahead of Sacramento. And then at the very top, you've got Oklahoma City and Denver both tied for second. Oklahoma City a few percentage points ahead behind the one-seeded Wolves, with the Clippers only three back. And then the Pelicans are only one game in the five spot ahead of the Suns. It's so bunched up, where in the East it's Boston, and then you get to that Milwaukee-Cleveland tier, then you get to that Knick-Philly-Orlando tier, and then it's really just play-in after that.
Yeah, it really sucks that the Knicks got hurt when they did, because they'd be easily staring at the three seed, possibly fighting for the two. The way they were playing.
When we were on Phillips's pod, I was adamant. I thought they could get the two, but the injuries have just been too much. But as long as the Knicks avoid the play-in, bro, I think you're okay. Just get healthy.
Yeah, I'm not too concerned about that. Talk to me in a week or two, but as of now, I'm really not concerned about it at all. But yeah, I mean, I've got my eyes on a couple. Listen, Beal has been playing a lot better lately. I will give him that.
Yeah, but unfortunately now Booker's hurt with the sprained ankle. This team just can't catch a break to have all three in the lineup for an extended period of time.
I mean, they put their eggs in three players' baskets and have, you know, the poo-poo platter behind them. So, and by the way, the poo-poo platter has been playing really over their head this year to keep them at the sixth seed as well.
Bro, Nurkic has actually been decent this year. I got to give him credit.
I do too, yeah. He's when he's healthy, I mean, that's the problem is you just can't stay healthy. He's decent shooter. A solid defender, good rebounder, and he's a great passer out of the post, too.
Yeah, he is. He sets a lot of things up when he's healthy and when he's able to win his matchups. But that's the thing is, this is a guy who hasn't played a full season in like 5-6 years. Can you count on it? A lot of wear and tear on this team. For
Suns don't have much they can count on health-wise.
It's just been that kind of season, and yet they're sitting in the sixth spot right now. Tom, before we get off the pod, because we're not going to do Curb tonight, we haven't had time to watch episode 5, I do want to talk about Caitlin Clark, because Wilda and I did our portion of the pod on Sunday, and we didn't address Caitlin Clark, and that was on me. I was fixated on positioning of the other teams in men's college basketball. But
listen,
she
man,
did
I've,
break the-
I've got – I didn't know much about Caitlin Clark until obviously last year with the national championship game and all that stuff, but – It comes to find out she's a golfer. So I'm all here for the Caitlin Clark conversations. She's just a walking bucket. She's an incredible player. I think she's going to change the WNBA, how Steph changed the NBA, extend it back a little bit more and turn it into more of a pace and space kind of game. Because they do play a little bit more set offense from what I've seen at least. But she's just an incredible player. She's just missing one thing, man. Hopefully she can go out and get it this year.
Yeah, she breaks the all-time Division One NCAA Division One points record.
Pistol Pete?
Past Pistol Pete. And everybody wants to try to compare the two. You can't compare the two. Pistol Pete wasn't even allowed to play his first year at LSU because
there's no three-point line, no shot clock.
Yeah, it's such a different game. And I feel like if you – the more caveats you put in, it makes it sound like you're making an excuse for Pete still to be the guy. I'm not. There are different times, different eras.
Well, it's the same thing you were doing when we were talking about LeBron and Kareem earlier. You gotta pay your respects a little bit.
For sure. And sports is all about contextualizing eras, not necessarily comparing them and putting everything where it needs to be explained for the layman who doesn't like to do any research. But – for Caitlin Clark, she has changed the women's game. She has changed it forever. What I did find interesting, Tom, and I wonder what you think, she bypassed her last year of eligibility next year where she could receive more NIL, make another run at a national championship, to go to the WNBA where the Indiana Fever have the number one pick, so she can stay pretty close to Iowa. But she's going to be compensated significantly less in the WNBA than she is probably at Iowa. What did you think of that decision?
I think she'll be A-okay. I sense a Nike and or another company deal. Lululemon's going to swoop in.
She's got State Farm with Jake.
Yeah, she will be A-okay. And she'll be able to do a hell of a lot more when she doesn't have to also go to college. So I think she's going to. I think she's making a very, very smart and savvy business decision. And women in sports are going to become much more prevalent in advertising over the next 10 years, in my prediction. And whoever's talking to her and telling her to forego college is a very smart human being. And if she made the decision on her own, then she's a very smart human being.
Yeah, it did raise some eyebrows, including mine, but I think it is the right call.
I'd be willing to bet every dollar I have that, not that we could ever find this out, but if you were to put out how much money she's going to make over the next year in college or how much she'd make doing what she's actually doing, I think it'd be significantly higher.
Yeah, I would agree. Where does she rank amongst the all-time great college careers between men's and women's for you, just in what you've watched in your lifetime?
She needs a title.
I think so.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you talk about especially college basketball being a team sport, but when you're one of the greats, you got to have a title. Patrick Ewing's got a title. Talk about some of the other college greats. Grant Hill, he's got multiple titles, right? You look at some of your UConn guys that stayed for all 4 years. They got titles. Tyler Hansborough has a title. All of those UConn women, I could sit on this podcast for forever. They got titles. Candace Parker has a title. I'm trying to think. Does Lisa Leslie have a title?
I don't know if Lisa
Leslie
does. God
damn, now I got to look that up.
But to your point, like, I think that for what she's done, she's changed the game.
Absolutely. Forever. But if you want me to consider you one of the greatest college basketball players, not only women but players, I'm not putting you on that list without a title. Because, like, I'm not telling you that Steph Curry is one of the greatest college basketball players of all time, but he was one of the most fun, awesome.
Yeah, Curry changed the game once he got into the NBA. He had those games where he was raining threes, but that we've seen before. I think the title would obviously cement it. But I do think that her legacy is already going to go down as somebody who made – I mean, you can talk to any casual fan, not Will and I, who are super dialed in right now to men's college basketball. Nobody can name a really good men's college basketball player. Everybody can name Caitlin Clark. And also I would put Angel Reese in there too.
Yeah, for sure. By the way, Leslie did not win a title. They went to the tournament all 4 years, but she did not win a title. I consider her one of the best WNBA players of all time. Now she's not one of the best college. Brittany Griner, another one you can throw in there.
Yeah. Hey, she won a title. Brianna Stewart at UConn lost one game in her 4 year career and won four national championships.
I mean, yeah, let's talk. She's one of the greatest college players of all time.
How is that even possible? Like, I think back on that run, like, one loss in 4 years and every year you won a natty.
I will say, though, I do like that ever since basically Breonna Stewart left, there's been a lot more parity in women's college basketball.
Yeah, and for the Huskies in particular, like Paige Beckers has had two season-ending injuries where she would probably be talked about in the same category as a Caitlin Clark and as an Angel Reese as the best players
in
the country.
It sucks for
her. But that's okay. Again, the parity is what makes it now. This sport was deprived of it for so long. And now really has it. But shout out to Caitlin Clark, one of the best careers collegiately of any basketball player of all time. And we'll see if she does get that title this March, man.
Good luck to her. I hope she does. And you know what? Fuck the haters. Go get that bag. It's your life.
Abso-fucking-lutely. You got anything else, brother? Welcome home again.
Thank you. I'm happy to be home. I'm getting back into the swing of things. It was an interesting trip. But yeah, I'm ready to get back and get after it. We're going to throw this one up, and then we're going to have a couple of more pods this week. So I'm excited, man. I'm happy to be back, and I'm happy to start a new club with you.
Yes, it's a good club to be a part of, and it began tonight. Let's get Will back into it, too. I think he deserves to be in it.
If you think Will should be in it, then I think Will should be in it. Just off that college basketball pod I heard on Friday and the one I'm about to put out with this one, I'm super excited.
Yeah, we've been doing a great job. Will's been crushing it. So everybody take care, and we'll be talking to y'all soon.
Enjoy the rest of the pod, guys.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. Will, it's you and me back again. Quick turnaround. It's Sunday night. Another weekend of college basketball is come and gone, and we had no real upsets this week. I don't think we're going to see any change in the top three this week.
I totally agree with that, and happy to be back, Shawnee. And we had some great games this weekend, some blowouts this weekend, but yeah, I don't think that top three is changing.
Oh, and really no reason for it to. Some teams won in more convincing fashion than the other, but I don't think you can knock any of the other teams out. Let's start with the number one team in the country, Will. Houston takes down Oklahoma, but they did it only by the skin of their ass. They beat them by two. And this was a game I asked you about on Friday. Does this have upset potential? You said it would either be a five-point game or Houston would run them out of the building. It was a point game.
Yeah, it was crazy. But also, that's what happens when Oklahoma shoots 48% from three. They're one of those teams that can do that. And in Norman, it's a tough place to play. And like I've said 1,000 times, anytime on the road in the Big 12, you never know what happens. LJ Cryer, again, every time you look at the Kapok score, the guy's got 20-plus points. He had 23, and Houston found a way to survive. We'll use the word survive because that's what they did. And they're moving on, still the number one team in the Big 12.
But it really is a different story when you're number one, because I don't know if it should make as much of a difference as it does. When a team is ranked second, third, fourth, top 10, they're going to be trying to be picked off by every one of their opponents. But I think when you have that number one next to your name in the left-hand column there, there's an extra level of you're really fending off everybody you're playing. That's what Hurley said. He was like, you know, every time you play a team, you are now that team's primary target, and you are now the team that everybody wants to say they beat number one, right?
Yep. The target doesn't get bigger than that number one in that left-hand column next to your college.
Not at all. Good win by Houston. I will tell you this. We know how good they are defensively, but they can't carry that every single game. And I will tell you that I was very impressed that they could win one of these shootouts with their offense.
Yeah, I was impressed too. And Oklahoma, even though they're not ranked, they're not a bad team. They'll be in the tournament. So, like I said, anytime you play anybody in the 12, on the road in the Big 12, I don't care if it's West Virginia, Oklahoma State, if they play their best ball, which Oklahoma did today, shooting 48% from three, they're gonna give you a game.
Question about it, and they've been in and out of that top 25. This is not a team that has really just come on late. They've had a good year overall. Like you said, they're a tournament
overall, yeah, they're a tournament team. They're, you know, they're, what are they, 18 win team? It's not like you're playing a 9-win team on the road. You win by two.
Exactly. So hey, survive in advance. Good win there by Houston. They did it in a different way than they normally do. Purdue, the number two team in the country, they beat Michigan State by six. Michigan State, they're not very good, but you know it's an Izzo team. They're going to come prepared. And this was a game where just Purdue had a little bit more than Michigan State did.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Edie drops 32. What else is new? And also, Michigan State plays these games. They play the number one, two, three team in the nation. It's going to be under a 10-point game. On the road to Rutgers, you watch them lose by 20. You're like, what happened to the Michigan State team that lost to Purdue by eight? They get throttled by Rutgers? So it's one of those years. It's a down year for Michigan State, which is weird to say with Izzo at the helm, as you said. But Purdue found a way to win. You know, if you just keep giving the ball to Edie, he's going to put up points.
He is, and that's why when you watch them have those kind of games, you do wonder how they can lose. And we know the recipe. We've talked about it on the pod. Edie gets into foul trouble, or there's a big on another team that neutralizes him, or they don't shoot well, like in the Ohio State game.
That's the thing. That's the way to beat Purdue is – you have to be hopeful, one, that they're missing their shots, and then you need to double or triple team Edie so he has to pass it out. But you got to hope they miss their shots. And with Purdue, as we've seen in tournament time, that's what they do. They miss their shots. They rely on a guy that's 7'4" to drop 30 points, so they get an easy win. But when somebody takes Edie away and they struggle to hit their shots, anybody can beat them.
Sure. And again, if they can play at their tempo and their pace, Michigan State is a team that is very happy to play at Purdue's pace, which plays into Purdue's favor. But if they get into a track meet, that completely neutralizes Edie.
Yep, for sure. Because, you know, they the Ohio State game, I don't know how much you watched about that, but they were running. They would inbound the ball, be run. They run. Edie stuck in between half court on one side and half court on the other side because he can't get back fast enough.
And that's where you look at and kind of question, why don't a lot of other teams just take that recipe from Purdue's or from Ohio State's playbook? But not every team is good at playing a very up-tempo style of basketball.
For sure.
Okay. In a game that was probably the most impressive of the weekend as far as a singular performance goes, number 3 UConn showed why they were number 1 for 7 straight weeks. They kicked the absolute living shit out of Seton Hall. They beat them by 30 on senior day. And you asked me before we got on the pod if I turn it off at halftime or if I'm – like, Will, this is what they do. They – when they play like this, you really don't know. You can guess out of maybe 6 to 7 guys who had the best game offensively. But they're so interchangeable. They're so unselfish. They're so tenacious. Seton Hall never had a chance in this game.
Yeah, and I was watching most of the first half, and Seton Hall is hitting these ridiculous threes, and I'm like, this cannot continue for them. It's not possible. And then UConn was just doing anything they wanted, inside, outside. I think, and you know, you're a little bit of a homer, so you're probably going to agree with me, but is Castle and Newton like the best duo of guards in the country?
Shit, I mean, you could also put like when DR is in there.
Exactly. And I mean, the only people that I would compare is the Houston guards with Shedd and Cryer. But watching these guys play today, it was like they were playing against a JV team.
And they've done that a couple times this year. I mean, they've done it. They did it against Xavier when literally you had Sean Miller questioning whether his team could ever play basketball again. You saw what they did to Marquette. Like, they've had a lot of these games. This is their 10th win by 20 points or more this year.
I mean, it's crazy to think that you're playing in a Big East game against a good Big East team, and your walk-on seniors are in it like the 4-minute mark. That's how out of hand that game got.
It is. And what I love about UConn and what I love about Hurley is, again, I'm going to reference your line because I love it. They don't play with their food.
Not at all.
Like, they show no mercy, and there is a certain standard that those players have to meet Hurley's ridiculous criteria, but it's a national championship criteria, and it's one that you saw the kind of team that molded in March last year. You're seeing it again. You really don't know. You can't really pick up of a reason why they can't repeat.
Of course, and you got to love Hurley, man. You had to watch it. Caravan had a bad pass when you guys are up 27 points, and he's going nuts on the sideline. What the fuck are you doing? Like, you're up 27, but this guy's pretending it's a tie game, and you got to love that out of coach.
Of course, and, you know, everybody likes to see their coach keeping a certain level of play and standard, like I said before, but it's not always realistic, and I think in some cases it looks fake. There's no disingenuous mentality with Hurley. That is who the guy is. And he's going to point to Caravan and say, the reason we clean that shit up is because we can't have you making that pass in a close game.
For sure. 100% true. And, I mean, you got to think that UConn's the favorites to win the national championship again. You have to think.
I personally do. What do you think?
I mean, you can't – even though Houston's number one and UConn spent most of the year at number one – I mean, I can't bet against Hurley and UConn with the depth they have, the big guys they have, the guards they have, the style of basketball they play. I don't, you know, we talk about how good Houston's defense is, but I want to see Houston's defense against a team like that.
Well, to kind of go back to what we were talking about with Purdue, Connecticut can play so many different styles of basketball that you really can't game plan against them, because if they want to play a muck it up defensive type game, they can win a lot of those games. They want to play shootouts and track meets, they can play that way too. You're not going to find a team that rebounds any better than UConn. So they're going to always have that advantage. And like I said before, the best thing about them is they're so incredibly unselfish that you look up and you're never surprised who put up 15 and 6 or 20. Like, holy shit, Caravan had 21. Like I said before, Cam Spencer didn't do anything in this game. I think he had 1-3, and you kind of don't even worry about it because they win by 30.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think Houston would struggle with a team like UConn because Houston doesn't have height. They don't have height. They have athleticism, but they don't have height like UConn does.
Kingan is in the best shape of his career, a little lighter. He had a dunk and a transition play earlier today. It's a recipe for disaster if you're a team that has to go up against this buzzsaw. Because when they play like they played today, you can't imagine them ever losing.
I turn the game off at halftime. Like, this is over. It's going to be a 30-point game.
Moving on, because obviously UConn killed Seton Hall. And as for Seton Hall, it's like, listen, you just had a terrible matchup. It's okay. Mm-hmm. You're still a good team. Number 4 Tennessee takes down Alabama in Tuscaloosa. They beat them 81-74. What did you take from this game, bro?
I think Tennessee proved how good they really are as a team because Dalton Connect was off. He was off. He was did not have a good game at all. And then the rest of the team rallied around, and they ended up beating a good Alabama team on the road with Dalton Connect being like 1-for-8 from three.
What I love the most about this Tennessee team is they're really squashing the narrative that's lingered around them for the last several years. Like I said on Friday's pod, they do have Connect who can go on his own personal 10-0 run.
Yep.
But they have different ways of beating you now where this is not a game I think they were winning last year or 2 years ago.
Absolutely not. This is a game where, you know, at the five-minute stretch, they have a seven-point lead and they don't make a shot. Now, in this Tennessee team under Rick Barnes, you know, they're up five. They waste the shot clock and they get a good shot. And, hey, now they're up eight with 3 minutes left. You didn't see that 2 years ago. They would rush a shot and then get beat in transition and lose a game.
I think the biggest difference for me, and I wonder if you agree, I felt like for a long time they just tried to win because they had some of the best athletes in a matchup. I think now they have some of the best basketball players in most matchups.
Yeah, and this is Tennessee. And, you know, Tennessee's always in the top 10 or close to it or whatever you want to say. But it's just, I feel like it's singular players on the team that are trying to play. This is the most as a team Tennessee that I've seen in a long time.
It's indicative, right? They're winning games that they weren't winning, like we just said. So the proof is in the pudding, man.
For sure.
In a matchup that I was really excited for, Creighton knocks out Marquette. I want to give Marquette a lot of credit. I know they lost by 14. They were hanging in there, and they didn't have Iguodaro or Tyler
Cole. Yeah.
And they were hanging. It was a 2-point game, you know, with like 6 minutes left. And obviously Creighton at home is just a different team.
Yeah, but for sure. Yeah, and that's the thing. It was a must-win game for Creighton after their last, you know, losing to St. John's. And obviously after blowing out UConn, obviously you have to keep pace with the Marquette and the UConn in the conference. But they did what they needed to do. Granted, injuries happened. Stuff like that happened. But as you said, Marquette, without their two best players, were down by 4 points at one point until Creighton went on a run and ended up winning by 16.
I was impressed with Marquette. That was a game where they had every excuse to lay down and die. But Shaka got the most he could out of those guys. Obviously, Cam Jones was excellent, but he was really the only threat there, particularly as the game, you know, got a little further along.
What a matchup we have next week for Marquette, huh?
Hey, buddy. I'm wondering if we're going to see Tyler Kolick. Iguodaro, I think he was on the trip, so I think he was just sick.
So, I mean, to be honest with you, if Kolick's not ready, if he's like 75%, why play him? You know, in a game that maybe matters for seeding in the Big East tournament, but hurting him further when you have a shot at winning a national championship with a team like Marquette, why would you risk it?
I agree with you totally. And, you know, I forgot to mention before, obviously with UConn's win, they clinched the regular season outright Big East crown. So in this game for Marquette, it's not like you're chasing them with a chance to still win it.
You're either going to be the two or the three. That's what it depends on.
Yep. Don't have to spend much time on this game. Arizona killed Oregon 103-83. Again, it's Washington State and Arizona is the class of the Pac-12.
Yeah, and we talked about it. We talked about it the other day about Arizona. They did, if they play with their food, it's going to be a close game. But they didn't. You know, I love that term. But Arizona, that team, they had three guys with 20 plus points: Johnson, Larson, and Love. Are they supposed to make a push for a number one seed?
Well, there's definitely thought that they could be the fourth one. Right now, I would put Tennessee, and I would keep Tennessee in there until they lose. I've seen Arizona have some worse losses than Tennessee's had. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, when Arizona plays like this, they're definitely –
Well, you also got to think about the skill of competition. Obviously, the Conference of Champions is not what it used to be. And the SEC is very, very good this year.
Very good and very deep. Okay. Baylor, I'm sorry about this one, Will. Baylor beats Kansas 82-74. I'll let you take the bus or the wheel.
It was just a frustrating game to watch. You know, we played a good first half. And this is the thing. I forgot who was doing the game said it. This is one of the worst teams that Bill Self has had in his 21 years at Kansas. And they're number 7 in the country. How crazy is that to think? Because it is one of the worst teams Bill Self has had. You have an amazing starting five, but you have zero depth coming off the bench. And guys like Dickinson and KJ Adams, they can't play 40 minutes a game. Yeah, DeJuan Harris can, but they have no other scoring threats off the bench. If they get 8 points from their bench in a game, that's a good day. But for any other bench in the country, 8 points? Are you kidding me? But also, it shows that like Hunter Dickinson offensively is a problem for a lot of teams. Defensively, if you have an athletic center like Misi did whatever he wanted to Hunter Dickinson. Hunter Dickinson got hit him like twice, maybe. But this guy was just making one jab step and Dickinson's falling over because he's not as athletic as Misi. Baylor is one of those sneaky dark horse teams that would you be shocked to see them in the Final Four? I wouldn't.
I wouldn't at all. No, I wouldn't at all. They're a really, really talented team. They've had a lot of success this year. First of all, they're almost impossible to beat in that building of theirs. But no, I wouldn't at all. They have every dynamic you need as a team that can go deep into March.
Yeah, for sure. And that RJ Dennis, I obviously have a little bias in DeJuan Harris, but he's got to be one of the best passers I have ever seen out of the guard position this year. I put him up there with DeJuan Harris passing wise, but he makes some dimes that are unbelievably like, wait, how did he see that?
Hunt had a big game too. Mm-hmm. Walker is going to do what he's going to do. He's an All-American and a lottery pick. The other aspect too, Will, McCullough played in this game.
He played well. He had 20 points. Yeah. But that's it. You know, you have Dickinson get 20. He gets 20, and you still lose by 8. I mean, somebody else has got to do something. You got to have another third scorer. They pulled up. Murphy had a bad game. He barely played the second half. El Marco Jackson, the freshman from Jersey, he played a lot, and he played pretty well. So hopefully he could be that next guy off the bench if Murphy can step up his game as that starting three spot.
This is definitely a game with Kansas as to why I think a lot of people believe that if they don't go on a big run, they're going to get picked off early. Because if it's 100%. Power and nobody else, they're going to have a hard time winning some games.
Yeah. So this is, you know, you never want to count out Bill Self, but this is, as a Kansas fan, being a Kansas fan as long as I am, I do not see a deep run for this team.
Oh, and you've been consistent about it all year, man. You have, even before we were doing the pods, we were texting in January and early February, and you were saying, I just don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the Kansas team that beats a UConn. You're beating Houston. Kansas still has the most ranked wins in the NCAA this year, but I'm saying they're not that team. They have those nights where they're getting a 17 out of 30 where McCullough scores 26 and Dickinson scores 20. But, you know, it's not consistent enough to do that.
Defense of Dickinson is an issue. It's a straight-up issue.
Very, very big issue. And you have the two great, the backcourt with Harris and McCullough defensively. But liability and with Dickinson, if you got a big man that's about 6'10", 6'11", but he's athletic, it's a problem for Dickinson.
Question about it. Iowa State, they beat UCF on the road by 8. This was not a pretty game, but it was a win they had to have, and they got it.
Yeah, it was one of those games that, you know, we talk about all the time about Big 12, and UCF has surprised a lot of people, beating a lot of teams that they shouldn't have beaten. But that's the Big 12 in a nutshell. I'm glad that UCF is here now. They're a good basketball program. Iowa State got the job done and did what they needed to do to keep pace with Houston in the top of the Big 12.
Sure. Iowa State, to me, what are they going to be? A 2 seed, 3 seed?
I think they're going to be a 2. They're going to be a 2. Because I think they beat a team like Kansas in like the semifinals. And that's a big win over a ranked team. And, you know, if you lose to Houston closely, how can you not be a 2?
Yeah, there was. You're looking at the other teams that could possibly be there as a 2. Iowa State, I think, has the best criteria, especially if they do what you're hypothetically proposing.
And yeah, they also had Baylor as a 2 as well, which I wouldn't put it past them either with the strength of schedule a Baylor or Iowa State has faced all year. And they have Kansas at a 3, which I think, you know, they might be even a 4 at this point. But we'll see how it goes.
We got one more week and then the conference tournaments to figure it out. In the ACC, North Carolina, they take down NC State, and Duke throttles Virginia 73-48. You asked the question, or it was a hot take. I can't remember how you posed it, but is Tony Bennett done? This is the kind of loss that you might not get back up from when the season's over.
100%. And we'll start with UNC first, and then I'll spout a little bit about UVA because I can't stand that team. But UNC, this is what I put in my notes, UNC beating a goodish ACC team, which NC State is a goodish ACC team. UNC, when they play like that, even though they won by 8, when they have very balanced scoring out of their starting 5, they're a very tough team to beat. And they also have one of the best offenses in college basketball as well. And I know we'll talk about Kentucky later and what they do. But when UConn's rolling on all cylinders, you know, RJ Davis is just – he's unbelievable.
Oh, he's incredible. And you know, Baycott is going to be a force to be reckoned with down low.
And, the emergence of Ingram as a big shooter is huge for UNC.
Yeah, he is somebody where in most matchups he's going to have an advantage. And if he starts to knock down shots on a consistent basis, they become a different team.
For sure. And now on to Duke. Give Duke all their credit. And, you know, I don't like Duke either. But what I have in my notes is I just have UVA is legit ass. Like they're just a bad basketball.
That's some great analysis, bro.
They're running an offense from 1950s in the 2020s. Like this is not going to work. They had 9 points with 11 minutes remaining in the first half. So. You know, UVA is going to be one of those teams that gets throttled by a nice little 13 seed in the tournament. And then Duke, you got to give your credit to, you know, Filipowski. You know, he came back from that maybe career-ending injury in Wake Forest. Yeah, right. And that's, you know, and he came out and, you know, you thought his career was over and he ends up putting up 20-plus points.
Proctor is the X factor for me. With
for
Duke.
Sure.
I know he has not lived up to what they thought they were going to get with him. Still an excellent player, and if he can just turn it up and keep that consistent, they are a team that could wreak some havoc in the tournament.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And then we got a bounce back in the SEC.
We did. Auburn, they kill Mississippi State. I don't have much on this game because they won very easily. It was a game they had to get. Remember, Mississippi State, they just narrowly lost to Kentucky, right? So.
Mm-hmm. It was a win that we talked about that was going to happen. It was going to be a double-digit win for Auburn. And, you know, they keep pace in the SEC as well.
Moving on, Illinois in the Big Ten. They knock off Wisconsin 91-83. I was paying a little bit more attention to this game. As I said on the Friday pod, I wanted to see Illinois. I wanted to see if they would stave off a potential upset. And they did. I got to give them credit. And they scored 91 points doing it.
Yeah, that's what I put down too. It was a game that Illinois had to win. They weren't even favored against I like to call it a fraudulent Wisconsin team, and it was a 91. They put up 91 points in a Big Ten game. I was like, are we watching the Big 12 right now? Or are we watching the SEC? You know, they got their job done. But we talk about it all the time. I don't trust them in March. I don't see a big run for them at all. You know, you like to use the term for Gazy, and I totally agree with that.
I want to see what they do in the Big Ten tournament too. If they knock off like a Purdue or something, I'll feel probably a little bit better about them. I don't know how good they really are. And this was an impressive win because Wisconsin, even though their record is terrible, they're not a terrible team. So I thought going on the road and getting this win was important.
Yeah, but I look at the Illinois team. This is also a team that could lose in the second round to Michigan State. I could see it happening.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. If they have one of those cold games or Hawkins or Shannon doesn't play great. Yeah, absolutely true. Kentucky, they beat up Arkansas in a game, honestly, that Arkansas came to play, and they had a chance to win. Too much firepower for the Wildcats, and they win. They put 111 up on Arkansas. By the way, Dillingham, ridiculous.
Yeah, I was about to say that too. But we, you know, we talk about it every week about Kentucky scoring with everybody, but we'll let anybody score on them, kind of thing. And you know, I had my bet on the pod, book the over, throw your mortgage on the over. The over, I texted you. I'm like, they have 66 combined points with 7 minutes left to go in the first half.
No.
It was crazy. But offensively, Kentucky is doing whatever they want. It's just, as we say all the time, the defense is, it might cost them in the tournament.
As I said on the text too, they remind me of an NBA team. They're going to give up a lot of points. That's just who they are. They are not going to flip a switch and become a UConn or a Houston defensively. But if they can stops late in games that will allow their offense to do what it does, and they can, you know, get three or four consecutive stops like they did yesterday, creating some steals, then they become – that's all they need to do, because their offense is always going to be there.
Yeah, and then, you know, that's what you said on the last spot is their defense isn't good, but when you need them to make stops, they make stops. And that maybe that could work in March. You know, maybe you can give up 93 points if you score 100 and you get two stops with 2 minutes left.
That's the thing. If they're scoring 100 points, they're going to beat most teams.
Yes, I agree.
Because a lot of teams, no matter how bad Kentucky's defense is, a lot of teams are not capable of putting up the amount of points that it would take to beat Kentucky on even an off night for them. So, moving on, Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference game of the year. They knock off St. Mary's 70-57. The Zags are back, baby. You called it.
Yeah, I called it. I said I took the Zags money line. They're back. The combo of Nembhard and Ike, I think that's how you pronounce his name, is starting to become a scary combo with a guard-forward combination. I understand they don't have much competition playing in the West Coast Conference all the time, but when those two guys are, you know, putting up numbers, they're a tough team to beat. I don't see a deep run for them in March, however. It's not the Gonzaga team at all where you had a Drew Timmy or a player like that you can just know that he's going to score 25 points a game.
Span of three nights, they kill San Francisco and they beat St. Mary's by 13. They're turning it on when they have to.
Well, Mark Fuse, a hell of a coach out there. So it's somebody not to want to bet against either come March.
I never want to bet on Gonzaga to be an early exit, but I also will never trust them to beat a better team.
Exactly. And it's been that way for the last decade.
Yeah. No, and listen, they've gone to – they went to the final when they lost to Baylor, right?
Athletic Baylor team, you know?
Yep. And that's unfortunately – they get better athletes out there now in Spokane than they used to, but they just – it just jumps off the screen at you as to how mismatched they are against the better teams in the country.
Absolutely. I look at Gonzaga as those – they get these players that are good college players and are going to be amazing overseas players. But they don't get a kid that's going to be amazing in the NBA.
Chet Holmgren might have something to say about that.
Yeah, I guess so. But it's still too early to tell about him, you know?
Yeah, he's been
But awesome. He's been very good.
He's been awesome this year. Honestly, if it wasn't for Wemby going on this ridiculous run right now, he was probably going to win Rookie of the Year. He'll finish second. And if you want to debate whether they should or not, yeah. South Carolina beat Florida 82-76. What a great game to start the day, dude. We got everything.
Well, even though that it was at noon, it was one of the most fun games to watch. And for the most part, my prediction was right. It was going to be a two-possession game the whole time. Florida goes on a big run and takes the lead, and then South Carolina didn't miss a shot. And what a clutch performance from Michi Johnson. And my question to you is he starting to push Connect for SEC Player of the Year?
If you just watch yesterday's game tape, yeah, absolutely he is. But he's also propelling a South Carolina team that was picked to, what, finish last in the conference to – they're going to be rising up the polls again this week. They're going to go from 18 probably into the top 15. Listen, Connect's the best player on the number 4 team in the country and a possible one seed. But what South Carolina's done this year with him right in the middle of it is special.
Yeah, you think Frank Martin's standing at UMass right now and being like, God damn it.
Do you think he's pushing for SEC Player of the Year?
Who?
The South Carolina kid.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Dalton Connect, the year he's had, it's kind of hard to But when you see games like that from E.T. Johnson, he's very consistent in his scoring. 15 points per game score. But when he has games like that where he's hitting clutch shot after clutch shot, it's hard to just give a unanimous to Dalton Knecht.
Both teams were trading shots there from like the 6 minute mark into probably about 2.5 minutes left. And it was matching 3 for 3 tough shots.
I was watching the game. I'm like, how many logo threes are going to be hit going back and forth?
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. What a fun game.
Absolutely.
Last one I have on deck for us, buddy, is Washington State killing UCLA. Well, beat them by 12. But just a good job by Washington State to get back up off the mat and win.
Yeah, they struggled in the first half against a subpar UCLA team. But when the second half came on, they just turned it on. And they said, hey, we're a top 20 team for a reason. They got the job done. And it's going to be them in Arizona in the finals, unless something crazy happens.
Okay, I have kind of a multi-tiered question for you. But can you really just detail why UCLA has fallen off so much? Mick Cronin's a good coach, but this program this year sucks. Did they get the wrong recruits? Like, what's going on?
I think they got the wrong recruits, or not the recruits they needed to be good. You know, they're not getting the balls. They're not getting, you know, players like that. I don't know if it has to do with, you know, UCLA not being what UCLA is known for now that the Pac-12 basically not going to exist. So I don't know if players that, you know, want to play in a Pac-12 want to go to a place where nobody wants to play anymore.
Cronin's job on the hot seat?
Yes. Agree. I mean, it has to be. You know, you hear the name UCLA, you think at least Sweet 16 every single year. And to know they're not even, maybe not even make the NIT, you got to think hot seat.
One of those programs that can't afford to be bad, because I know their football program has been much better of late, but that's a basketball school because of the history, and we know that. If Cronin is not getting the job done, I can't imagine they're going to have a hard time finding a replacement for him who wants to coach there. But they can't be dormant. They have to immediately get back to relevancy. This year's been
they have to get those kids that play in California, Washington, or Oregon, whatever you want to say, to come and play in UCLA like it used to be 10 years ago.
I'm amazed, because I have known Cronin as a coach for a long time, and he usually gets the most out of his players, even if they're not the best. So to see a year like this has been pretty startling.
Absolutely.
All right, you want to preview some games for the week, buddy?
Sure. Sounds good. Let's do it.
All right, let's start off on Monday. I kind of went in order here. Duke at North Carolina State. North Carolina State played, you said they are a good-ish ACC team. They pushed North Carolina a little bit, but Duke coming in, that's a tough back-to-back.
It's definitely a tough back-to-back, and I think they pushed Duke as well, especially being at home. But I don't think they have enough to take down a Duke. They'll be middle of the road come ACC tournament, but I think Duke takes care of business there.
Since Filipowski was able to get a brand new ACL in the span of 3 days, I think.
I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, that guy, he beats all the odds after his almost career-ending injury in Wake Forest. So
we can all take a collective sigh of relief.
Texas
at Baylor. Texas got a good win, but listen, Texas is not very good. Baylor is, especially in Waco. I don't particularly see this game being close.
See, I think the opposite, actually. I'm thinking not a letdown to lose, but a letdown from beating a Kansas team in a very emotional game, and Texas coming off a big win. I think Texas keeps this close until probably the five-minute mark of the second half, and you'll be surprised to see, hey, oh, Baylor only won 67-61. And then you'd be like, oh, Texas played well. I think it's more of a letdown on the Baylor end.
Texas just really relies on the three ball too much for my liking.
Yes. Yeah.
And when they go cold,
Baylor doesn't give up many open shots if you watch their defense play. So Texas could be in for a hurt, but I think it's gonna be closer than a lot of people think.
All right. We'll see. Number 2, Purdue travels to Illinois, take on number 13, Illini. This is a good game in the Big Ten, dude. Chance for an upset?
I think it definitely a chance for an upset. You know, I don't trust either team per se. I don't trust the Big Ten. You know, we both don't. But I think Purdue, Illinois does what I was just talking about with Purdue. You know, double team Edie, and I don't think on the road in a loud champagne that Purdue hits their shots. I think an upset is happening here.
All right. Declaring it. Let's fucking go. Notre Dame at number 9, North Carolina and Chapel Hill. I expect North Carolina to take care of business.
Yeah, put the walk-ons in by the 7-minute mark here in the second half.
There you go. I just hope that they're not looking too forward to the final game against Duke this weekend.
Yeah, so my whole thought, yeah, of course. I don't think they will. I mean, maybe they'll look a little bit past Notre Dame, but I still think they win by high teens at least. But the other thing I have to say is, what happened to Notre Dame? Ever since Mike Bray has been gone, and Notre Dame was never a top 10 team, but they were always competitive regardless if they were playing Duke, they were playing UNC, a good Virginia team at the time, or a good Louisville team at the time. It was always a five-point game. And now they're barely beating Louisville and Georgia Tech.
I'm with you. That's another program. I'll have to do a deep dive on the programs who have had a lot of success in years. I don't think any team has fallen the way Louisville has. But Notre Dame is certainly been in a rough stretch for a few years now.
Yeah. So.
Yep. Big time game in the SEC. Alabama travels to Gainesville to take on the Gators. How do we see this game going?
Well, I mean, both of these teams need to bounce back. They both lost in tough ways. They both lost. So is number 14 going to lose 2 in a row, or is number 24 going to lose 2 in a row? And Florida is one of the tougher places to play in the SEC. I could see this game being a 5-point game either way.
I will take Alabama to win comfortably.
Okay. Well, you just think Florida is just going to collapse now?
I just think between the two, I think Alabama is the much better team.
I agree with that for sure.
I can't see them losing 2 straight.
I agree.
Moving on, your rivalry game, Kansas State takes on Kansas at Allen Fogg.
No shot for Kansas State. They already beat us once this year. I hate Kansas State, but I think big bounce back. I think Furphy goes off. I think we see a lot more from Marco Jackson. We see a lot more from Marco Jackson. And I think Kansas wins by 15 points.
I agree with you. I don't see this game being close even for a little bit. Moving into the SEC, Auburn at Missouri. Here's another game that I don't think will be particularly close. Auburn's back in the win column. I expect them to steamroll.
I just, you know, you got to start feeling bad for Missouri. They don't even have an SEC win. I bet on them the other day, and I'm like, you know, maybe they'll get one, and they lost by 20. So I can't see Missouri keeping this close for more than the first 7 minutes of the game.
Sure, if that's, I feel like that's being very gracious. Mm-hmm. Moving on to the A-10, Dayton at St. Louis.
So St. Louis is having a down year in the A-10. I mean, they're always a tough team to play, but this year they're having a really rough year. I think Dayton does whatever they want, and that's a blowout as well.
I expect the same. San Diego State at UNLV in the Mountain West. San Diego State ranked number 20 in the country right now. That might move up. How do you see this game playing out?
Mark my words right now. Upset. Running Rebels.
Holy shit.
Mountain West at it again. Tough on the road games. I think UNLV upsets them.
I saw yesterday, according to Jerry Palm, he has 6 Mountain West teams in.
So you have what? You have San Diego State. You have Utah State. You have Nevada. You have UNLV, Colorado State. Who's the other one?
I don't know. I just saw he had 6. So I don't know who the 6th team is, but I feel like 5 is the better number and probably more logical, but again, we have to see how everything
goes. Yeah, I agree with that as well. But also, I can see one of these teams that are not projected to, especially with how the Mountain West has been this year, I can see one of these teams that projected to be on the bubble actually winning the Mountain West, because that's how that year has been in that league.
It's been absolute chaos. It's been a menace. It's been a chaotic situation out there for sure, and a lot of fun. All of those teams, I think, are capable of having decent tournament runs. I'm not predicting any to win the national championship, but I think that they're all very formidable foes for other teams.
Absolutely. So, is this the game of the week, Sean?
I was just going to ask you the same thing. Personally, I think it is. UConn at number 5, Marquette. Marquette's ranking is going to go down a little bit, but I don't really care. Again, we talked about why they struggled so much against Creighton.
Yeah. It's definitely the game of the week. Sorry to interrupt you. If Kolek is back. But also, it's maybe a little bit revenge for Marquette after the beatdown they got the last time they played UConn.
They've had this game circled since that beatdown. Mm-hmm. Marquette is good to be outclassed like that.
Yeah, so I think UConn still takes care of business, but I think it's a significantly closer game than what happened in stores.
This is going to be a game where Dan Hurley and his psychotic nature is going to show up, because let's be honest, it could be a letdown game. Senior Day just happened. You beat Seton Hall by 30. You clinched the Big East regular season title. You've already dominated Marquette. It's a game that they could let their guard down. I personally don't expect it to happen. And if Kolick plays, and you expect Igudaro to be healthy again to play after his illness, I can't imagine Marquette has had a single moment of a practice since that game in Hartford where they haven't looked forward to coming back and playing them again.
I mean, it's just going to be one of those games that everybody's got to hit their shots, and I think everybody will hit their shots. And, you know, I'm thinking a high-scoring game, not that either of these teams' defenses aren't good, but I think it's more about hitting shots than anything else.
On upset alert, I think Marquette could win this game if everybody's healthy and good to go.
Is that really an upset? You're playing the number – well, they're probably seven. But you're playing number – is that really an upset if you lose by two?
I think because of what you just saw UConn do, yes.
Okay.
Maybe not so much from the numbers, but yeah. And also what UConn's already done to them this year. So that's my own personal thought. But we'll see how Vegas has that game and what the spread looks like. Houston at UCF. We know about the pesky nature of UCF at home. I expect Houston to have no issues, though.
I totally agree with that. And my only thought is it wouldn't surprise me if the spread's like 7.5 instead of like 15.
Tennessee is that's a fun
This is definitely going to be a fun game. This is where how good we think South Carolina really is comes into this game. Even if they lose this game, but it's a close game throughout, even though it's at home, I think you could say to yourself, oh, can South Carolina make a run? You know, you stayed with one of the top teams in the country all the way through. Granted, it was at home, but it's a big staple in the season for South Carolina. Also, on the other hand, Tennessee can't afford to lose to South Carolina either. So they got to come play their A game. Dalton Kinnick has to play better than he did last week, even though the team around him played better than they usually do when Kinnick is going off. But Kinnick has to have a better game against a team like South Carolina that if Michi Johnson's hitting his shots, it could be a rough day for Tennessee going into Gamecock land.
South Carolina wins this game, I'm officially – they have my full attention. Because I think they're very good, but I think the top of the SEC is at another level. But we're going to find out.
Yeah, we will. That's going to be a hell of a game.
I'm really looking forward to that one. That might be right up there with UConn Marquette for game of the week.
Absolutely.
BYU at Iowa State. BYU has obviously the upset against Kansas earlier this past week. Are they going to do it again and go into Iowa State and Ames and get a win?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think this is a double-digit victory for Iowa State. They barely beat a bad UCF team. I wouldn't say bad, a middle-of-the-road UCF team on the road, but I think they take care of business at home. And they win by teens, at least.
I think the exact same thing is going to happen with Kentucky hosting Vanderbilt.
You think Kentucky's going to drop 130? They might.
They might fuck around and put up 130. Utah State at San Jose State. I know San Jose State sucks, but in the Mountain West, anything goes. Do you expect this game to be close at all, or
I think it's one of those games that we talked about. Missouri maybe close for the first 10 minutes of the game, but then Utah State pulls away. And then second half, walk-ons are in by the five-minute mark.
Two games to preview, both out in the Pac-12. Number 6, Arizona at Mick Cronin's UCLA Bruins. And then Washington at number 19, Washington State.
See, there's not much to say about Arizona-UCLA. We talked about UCLA before, and they're not the UCLA of old. But I do have a little bit of feeling that Arizona kind of looks past them a little bit. And a game that should be a 20-point game might be like an 8-point win for Arizona.
And for Washington State, you think they just handle business against the Huskies?
I think they just handle business against the Huskies getting ready for the Pac-12 championship.
I think you're right. Last week of the regular season, dude.
Oh, I can't believe it. It's gone by so fast.
It really has. Fun in the past. Fun week to look forward to when we talk again.
I really can't wait to talk about these conference tournaments. It's going to be electric.
When we talk again, we'll be previewing the final weekend of the regular season, looking back on a lot of these matchups. We'll see what they have in store for us. Until next time, Will, great talking to you, buddy.
Thanks, man. Talk to you soon.
Take care, everybody.